Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media on a Friday afternoon, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios here on Madison's Near West Side from Mad Radio 92.7 FM, WMDX 1580 AM, and all the terrific Civic Media radio stations around the state of Wisconsin, the Shaw and Waukesha locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, the Talk of Green Bay in Green Bay, and so many more, like WRCE News from the Center, where is the flagship station for our friend here, Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show. Todd, how are we doing this Friday afternoon?
I get to spend an hour with you, Luke Mathers. How could I not be well?
You're doing double duty.
It's a good Friday indeed.
Pulling a fourth hour of radio after bonus coverage of the election night on Tuesday, your three-hour show every other day this week. And now here you get to round out the week with me on the airwaves.
It's fantastic.
Appreciate you.
I appreciate you. I appreciate the opportunity. Going to have some good subjects, some good callers today. I'm looking for Jack in the Sack.
It's Jack from Merrimack. Come on. Mark from the Sack. Mark from Prairie to Sack. Come on.
I get my Jackson Sacks mixed
up. It's okay,
up.
Folks. We're still breaking Todd into the Civic Media Radio Network here. He's got a couple months under his belt, but not absolutely familiar with all the callers, but that's
still
okay.
New. Yeah, I'm an old dog trying to learn a new trick.
It's all good. I had one of those old tricks of the computer in front of me deciding, right before we go on air, you prepped all these glorious stories to talk about with Todd. It would be a shame if they disappeared.
Now it's just us. You, me, and a mic.
Phone lines are working now, so I got everything set up. We're all set to go. 844-967-2789. If you got a tangent you want to share with Todd and I on this Friday afternoon, dial them up. 844-967-2789. If you got the most Wisconsin headline of the week, we want to hear it. I got a couple, or I got one submission. I won't fudge it. I have one. I can't stretch it to any more than that. But I saw a very Wisconsin headline. We're going to be breaking down for a while. I think we'll be having conversations around Tuesday's election results. But really excited to have a conversation with you. Brian and I kicked him around yesterday and the day before with William Walter. But your perspective, I think, Todd, from somebody born and raised in southwestern Wisconsin, former Republican, now
independent.
Independent. I was going to say, how do you absolutely refer to yourself there? But an independent-minded individual now, but still very politically active, focused on the headlines, aware of what's going on. Excited to take pick your brain a little bit about your takes on where we go from Wisconsin politics. And so, in that vein, I think that's where we can start, because there's a lot of moving pieces on the chessboard of Wisconsin politics. Yesterday or today, I forget which day specifically, but U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin talking about the excitement of Tuesday's results. Still a lot of work to be done, and she teased an announcement coming next week. So we'll find out shortly here whether or not U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin will be running for re-election or not. I have a feeling she's probably leaning towards running, but no guarantees. We'll have to wait till next week. But we've also got some updates from our other senator here in Wisconsin, the senior senator from Wisconsin, and an update from his challenger last November, former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. But just to start, Todd, I'm curious to hear your takeaways from Tuesday's results and kind of your lay of the land of where Wisconsin politics are right now after our spring election this week.
First and foremost, of course, congratulations to Judge Janet Protasiewicz and her entire team. I thought they ran a good race. I understand. I know that Matt Rothschild's on your show and others talking about all the money that went in on both sides, and certainly
$45 million worth.
Is that incredible?
It is incredible. I mean, just so much money.
And you know, certainly no one can, well, I shouldn't say no one, but I, for one, am not happy with that on either side. You'd rather have less money. But because of the decision of Citizens United, to me, it just meant the Democrats, progressives, and the Protasiewicz team decided to play on the same level. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You play the cards you're dealt, and I'm happy that they didn't back down, that they didn't
see. They refused to play with one hand tied behind their
exactly.
back. They said, fine, these are the rules. We're going to accept the rules, and we're gonna beat you at your game then.
Right, and they did. So congratulations to them. I appreciate the fact that she was honest with voters when it came to women's reproductive rights and also gerrymandered maps. I thought that was great. And so number one, first and foremost, congratulations to her and the Democratic Party, Ben Wickler, and all those fine folks on the ground. I think that William Walter, who was on your show, of course, and a frequent co-host, he's done a great job with his organization and people on the ground. The grassroots campaign has now passed, in my opinion, the Republican side for getting people in motive and getting these, you know, unit maps, these district, these ward maps, and knowing exactly where the voters are and how to turn them out. So I think that's another accolade that needs to go out as a result of these elections. On the Republican side, they're in a conundrum. And you know, I spent 30 years in that party, ran races, was a candidate myself, was on the inside for quite a while. I will assure you that on the Republican side, they're having some very serious discussions right now on where they go from here.
Yeah.
Because and you look at the business community in this state, who isn't, they're kind of agnostic on social issues. They want to support Republicans for lower taxes, lower corporate taxes, mm-hmm. more freedom to do things. And the position the Republican Party has staked out on social issues, like being absolutist on abortion, wanting to have women have children, even in cases of rape and incest, the absolutist on democracy and adhering to pro-Trump forces.
Anti-democracy. They're absolutists.
Anti-democracy.
Well, then you just said democracy. Yeah. But yeah, but they've taken a stance against democracy in many regards.
100%. And as Greg Sargent pointed out in his article and post for the Washington Post today, the combination of those two things, their position on abortion and being anti-democracy, could well be the kryptonite for Republicans moving into 2024.
Yeah, and folks, there was a lot of hard work that went in Tuesday. Absolutely. Feel free to take a breather, take a little break. We've got this holiday weekend coming up. It's the Easter season. There's plenty of people that are unplugging, taking some time off. And I absolutely encourage that. But it seems like next week we will be in the 2024 cycle.
Yeah.
It seems like U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin will be announcing whether or not what her plans are. And if she doesn't plan to run for re-election, there will be Democrats jumping into that race as well then. But I have a feeling she's going to be running for re-election, and Republicans are going to be pretty much on the clock of coming up with candidates to run against her. And I have a feeling those hard conversations are maybe even scaring away some of the candidates that Republicans may put up. Because you saw throughout this, it was kind of weird to see him during the Supreme Court and the spring primary races, mm-hmm. because obviously it was still so far down the line. But there's been pieces talking about who would be the Republican candidate to come out of a primary for the U.S. Senate bid in 2024. And I have a feeling that Tuesday's results, there's got to be some pretty heavy numbers for those potential candidates to be weighing and having those conversations behind closed doors right now. Because, as you pointed out, the absolutist positions that that the party has taken that would require these candidates to go through a primary challenge, it's going to be very difficult for any of those primary candidates to emerge on the other side and then have to face a very formidable opponent, in my opinion, of U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. She's been extremely successful in her two terms in the U.S. Senate. She's gotten so much bipartisan compromise done and passed from legislation into law and has delivered for a lot of Wisconsinites. And so she's going to be a tough candidate to take on, I believe. And it's going to be interesting to see as we continue to keep an eye on ground zero here in Wisconsin, because that's what we are. We're ground zero for national politics, and there's going to be a lot of focus with the fact that the balance of the Senate may also be running through Wisconsin for 2024, of where Republicans go from here. because it seems like there's a lot of finger pointing going on right now. We talked about the postmortem that Dan O'Donnell did over at the MacGyver Institute, and it didn't really seem, in my opinion, that there was a whole lot of solution forward. It was kind of just a lot of grievances, which we do hear here on Civic Media and across the network with the Devil's Advocates on Fridays. But it seems like there's a lot of moaning right now, Todd, but I have no clear sense of where politics goes next here in Wisconsin.
I don't like giving Scott Walker credit, but when I do, he tweeted this out yesterday. A former Republican governor tweeted this out. He said, quote, "Younger voters may be behind the stinging loss for conservatives in Wisconsin this week. In November, 18 to 29-year-old voters in Wisconsin went with the radical candidate by 40 points. Digital ads, student coalitions, none of these will do it. We have to undo years of liberal indoctrination." I mean, that's what the former governor means. So the fact is, as I've said before, Republicans are not completely stupid. They understand that they might have stupid positions. But there, I mean, people like Brian Schimming, now the chair of the Republican Party, I've known for years.
Mm-hmm.
He is politically astute. I can't imagine what's going on at the Republican Party of Wisconsin, RPW, right now. Because he and Mark Jefferson, they read the tea leaves, they read the polls, they understand. And even the former governor, who is not the brightest bulb on the string, even he could get this. That younger voters don't like it when you attack women's reproductive rights. They don't like it when you're just seen as mean and nasty. We had a call on our show a couple days ago from Oregon, Wisconsin here, driving through Richland Center, dialed us in on 107.7 in Richland Center, news from the center. He said, "I'm a Republican." I asked him, I said, "Do you still consider yourself a Republican?" He said, "Yes." But he said, "I'm tired of the hate. I'm tired of just the arrogance of the Republican Party. And I'm tired of them attacking women." And he voted for Janet Protasiewicz. And if you look at the map, that's where Republicans did poorly with those type of voters.
Yeah, there is a very glowing evidence of when you look at the map that's exactly where Dan Kelly had a hard time and Republicans had a hard time this go around. And it's going to be very interesting to see if they identify the problem and they complain about it or just come up with liberal indoctrination at college campuses is the problem, not actually saying
ban more books.
It's our positions that are the problem. Maybe we should moderate us a little bit. Or no, it's those universities, those pesky universities.
They need a fairy godmother to do a bitty boppity boo and give them a new look, but they wouldn't like that because they'd have to wear a dress.
Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined by Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show on a Friday afternoon. Share your tangents with us, 844-967-2789. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to take us with you on the go, download the Civic Media app. Broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios. And I am joined in those studios by Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show that broadcasts across WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center. Bull Falls Radio, our friends up in Wausau, Marathon County, WXCO, which is currently broadcasting the Chad Holmes Show, terrific program. You can check the podcast out of Chad after the fact, but you're going to want to stay tuned here on Dueling Tangents for this conversation. but also on Lake Air, WLAK, out of Amory, and a brand new signal as well out of Hayward. It's humming along. We're getting started, but WBZH, the Buzz of the Northwoods, Hayward, our friends up there listening on 9:10 a.m. Welcome to the party, Hayward.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
The new promos associated with that. Get Buzz in the Northwoods. It'll be fantastic. The on-location promos.
Todd can't wait. Just be sitting up in the Northwoods with a six-pack of beer, just ready. Hey, I'm here for work.
That's right. Getting buzzed in the Northwoods.
But having a conversation about where Wisconsin politics goes next here. We had the spring primary on Tuesday with results that mirrored Dan Kelly's defeat in 2020. So I don't know if they're shocking results, but there was a lot of national attention put on this race. There was a lot on the line, a 10-year term on the state's highest court, and it was a pretty decisive victory for Janet Protasiewicz. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of takeaways going around. Where do the Republicans go next? What happens now that the court was going to be changing hands? It's a very interesting aspect of where we are now, because in 2023, we've got a lot to go still left in the year, but a lot of people also peg the race as the most important race of the year. I think the takeaways and where people go next with this information from the election is going to be just as important, if not more. Because going forward now, what happens with the lay of the political landscape here in Wisconsin goes is if people take the takeaways the way that either they should be taken, or if they decide to run with them in a different direction. And folks, if you would want to share your thoughts, 844-967-2789, that's 844-96-PARTY. But as you were alluding to, these behind-the-door, closed-door conversations the Republicans are more likely than not having right now. Mark Jefferson, individual, the executive director of the Republican Party here in Wisconsin, has a quote in a piece over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel saying that we did not hit back on abortion. So it's not that their takeaway is we need to moderate our position on abortion. It's we didn't fight the ad war hard enough. And so is their takeaway, Todd, just going to be, oh, we need to run more ads. We need to pump even more, as you alluded to, most expensive judicial election in the entire country's history. And it seems like one of the takeaways that the Republicans are saying, oh, well, we just need more ads on these issues, not that we need to, you know, moderate our positions.
Well, I know Mark Jefferson well. We're about the same age, worked at the state capitol together in Republican politics, and then he screwed me over in my first assembly race, but that's a story for another day. I've felt the sting of Mark Jefferson's knife in the back. So I know the guy pretty well. Mark Jefferson is, again, between a rock and a hard place, because he knows that in Wisconsin, they can't lose that mega base. They can't lose that base that gets out to the polls, rain or shine. I talked about it this morning on our show. When I went to state Republican conventions for years, and there was always this, it was hilarious, because the big speeches and the dinners were on Saturday night, and people would go to the dinner, and then afterwards there's all these reception rooms, and people would go around and get wasted, and a lot of times it was the most conservative legislator who was the best quote-unquote Christian who'd get wasted. And then they were forced to get up on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and go down to the prayer breakfast put on by the Wisconsin Right to Life, and a lot of these people hated it. They knew they had to go because they needed those entitled white little old ladies from Wisconsin Right to Life. They needed their vote. But that was for years, that was a small faction, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. But the last state Republican convention I went to was in 2006. And by that time, that's over 10 years ago now. Yeah. Even by that time.
That was 15 years ago.
Yeah. But even by that time, those far-right forces had started to have a real effect on the Republican Party. And so to answer your question, I think Jefferson's doubling down because he has to say to those people, we're not abandoning you. Because without them, they have zero chance of winning. But the conundrum is, if they don't bring on some of these people that voted for Judge Janet Protasiewicz, and in Greg Sargent's story in the Washington Post today, he was quoting our friend Professor Charles Franklin from the Marquette Law School poll, saying that it was white, non-college educated women, particularly in Southwest Wisconsin, who perhaps had voted Republican before, but crossed over and voted for Judge Protasiewicz this time, that really helped make the difference.
Yeah, and I mean, there's 10, 11 point defeat. There's a lot of areas that you have to look. I think that's one of them. But the gains, or I guess however you want to look at it, the gains versus losses in Ozaukee County and in the Fox Valley, in what gets referred to as the Bow counties now, Brown, Outagamie, and Winnebago. There were also just huge margins there that Janet Protasiewicz picked up votes compared to Dan Kelly.
Door County. Your home of Andre Jacques, one of the most conservative members of the state Senate. Protasiewicz won Door County.
Yeah, and Door County a little bit more of a bellwether, though.
Slightly more, but still, I mean, it's the first Senate district with Andre Jacques.
Yes. And so there's going to be a lot of areas where I think there's some soul reflection going on in Republican politics. One of the other things that I think we need to talk about is judicial ethics. Talking about that's kind of a question that Republicans are slapping around with Protasiewicz. But I've got some questions about one of the U.S. Supreme Court justices.
What's a yacht between friends?
You're telling me we're going to Indonesia this weekend? Come on, Todd.
There's nothing to that at all.
It's below deck the Supremes or something like that is going to be coming to A&E or whatever channel. I forget. Is it Bravo? I think it might be Bravo. But one of those coming up soon because we're going to talk about Clarence Thomas and the Billionaire and take your phone calls. 844-967-2789. You're listening to Dueling Tangents. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. And I'm joined by Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show, across several Civic Media stations on this Friday afternoon. You can listen to Todd Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WRCE News from the Center, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, and Lake Air in Amory. And in a very small area in Hayward. It will be a growing area in Hayward, but on Buzz of the North.
Like a morel mushroom. You'll wake up one morning, it'll just spring out of the ground.
Yeah, and I'll be the last one to find out.
Well, you and me both.
That'll be okay, though. We'll have fun with it, because we are a growing network here at Civic Media, and Hayward is the newest addition and on the dial, on the airwaves.
I can't wait. It's going
to
be fun.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled of the growth that we're going to be able to do as a network. And Todd and I talking about where Wisconsin politics go next, and going to be jumping to a story published by ProPublica. Excellent reporting by ProPublica about some ethical questions raised by U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and a billionaire friend of his. But before we jump over to that story and that tangent, let's head over to the phone lines. We got Jim in Appleton calling in. Jim, what's on your mind this Friday afternoon?
Hey, guys. I'm with the Republican Party. I think the worst thing that could have happened to them in the recent election cycles was having Ron Johnson win, because then they thought, aha, we've got a strategy that'll work. But instead of using it against a soft spoken, well-educated black man, they tried to use it against an upper middle class, outspoken white woman. Didn't go so well for him.
So you're saying that the Republicans took from November that they could just run on crime and a campaign like that with ads, and it's a strategy that just didn't work against Janet Protasiewicz? Or is that what you're getting at, Jim?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. I love Mandela Barnes. I voted for him. I have problems with their campaign. They didn't answer any of Johnson's attacks, and Protasiewicz was right there in Kelly's face with just about every attack he launched.
And did you say that you're currently a Republican?
No, I'm a former Republican.
Okay, well, so am I. Welcome to the club.
But you're saying that your takeaway is very similar to the takeaway from Mark Jefferson of, oh, we just need more ads. And so they played the ad game and lost this go around.
No, they need to change their direction entirely. They've got their base, but they keep catering to their base, and you can't win a general when you're catering to probably 20% of the population, and the other 30% or so that vote Republican are just doing it out of, my dad was a Republican, my grandpa was a Republican, therefore I'm a Republican. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great point. We've had people call on our show as well in the morning. The same thing. Either there have been a couple that are still say, hey, I'm a Republican, but I'm just not voting that way right now because of kind of the hate, the attacks on women, and the narcissistic approach of entitlement by the Republican Party. They don't care. We had somebody from Nina call last week in the Fox Valley and said they just don't represent us anymore like a guy like Mike Ellis used to.
Yep.
Were you an Ellis supporter?
Yes, I was. I think that was me you were talking about.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well. A time or two.
Well, we appreciate you calling.
I'm the guy that wants to refer to the Republican Party as regressive instead of conservative.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a terrific idea, and we appreciate the phone call, Jim. It is very interesting because that's kind of my takeaway, is the Republican Party right now is too focused on the primary, and there's been a takeover for a lot of the that's where they're held accountable. The Republican Party hasn't been held accountable in a general election. You're finally seeing the beginning of people trying to have some self-reflection on it, talking about how, well, we've lost, what is it, 7 out of the 8 last general election vote, or the popular votes for a presidential election. There's some kind of flirting with the, hey, we need to be better. And for far too long, it was Republicans are like, well, if we go far to the right, we're gonna excite all our base and we're gonna win elections that way. And it seems like through the last two go-arounds here in Wisconsin, that between Clayfish and Michaels last fall in the primary for governor, and then this primary for the two conservative candidates, against Janet Protasiewicz, but Dan Kelly and Jennifer Doro. That the primary, it gets very intense, and they go very far to the right, and then the stances that candidates have to take to win a primary makes it too difficult for them to win in a general. And I don't think that there's any of the self-reflection going on right now, at least that I can see externally from Republicans here in Wisconsin saying, hey, well, we collectively need to moderate ourselves so that we can go win and appeal to more voters in a general. It seems like they're very dead set on just going farther to right, taking extreme positions and using that tactic to win primaries.
I think the caller had a great point, Luke. And the point is, when probably he and I used to be members of the Republican Party, you had guys like Mike Ellis who would focus on fiscal conservatism, saving taxpayers money, actually trying to keep decisions back at home, focused on local control. During the Scott Walker era, last time I served in the Capitol, I'll tell you firsthand, there was never an overreach into local issues by state government like there was during the Walker era, whether that was groundwater with high capacity wells, fracking, mining. Time after time, they would usurp local control in favor of state Republican ideals. Number two, the last person who really barnstormed and won this state time after time, Tommy Thompson, four-time governor, winner in this state. Whether you agreed to all of his policies or not, nobody disputed that he loved the state. He would go around in a positive attitude. Highway 29, Green Bay to the Twin Cities now, to the borders. I mean, that was done by Tommy Thompson, putting money into transportation. Look at abortion. I was in the 92 or the 96 Republican convention in Green Bay. I was in the room. A reporter asked the governor about abortion. This was his entire answer. Tommy Thompson said, look, personally, as a practicing Catholic, I'm pro-life, but I respect other ideas, and I think there's a lot bigger things we could talk about in this state. Next question. That was it.
Yeah,
that was the entire issue.
And we are well beyond that era of Republican politics.
Exactly. Now Republicans have embraced this. You got Mark Jefferson doubling down on it, trying to usurp women's rights to their own bodies and not even making the exception for right or for endangerment of the mother's life and rape and incest. Yeah. That's a bridge too far.
Yeah, well, there's many bridges too far, in my opinion. Yeah. But moderate Wisconsin voters are agreeing that, yes, that is way too far. A 10-11 point defeat in Wisconsin is, we were joking that the Evers reelection of 3.5% margin was a Wisconsin landslide. I don't know what you call an 11-point victory.
Back where I'm from in southwest Wisconsin, we call that a whooping. Yeah, you got whooped.
That's what, that's a good way to classify it. And we appreciate your phone call, Jim. You could be like Jim, 844-967-2789. If you got a tangent on the state of Wisconsin politics, Republican politics, Democratic politics, however you want to share your tangent on this Friday afternoon, 844-967-2789. But another story that I've been letting simmer, Todd, because I wanted to get to it yesterday, but we had a lot of fun, Brian and I, going through the postmortem that Dan McDonald put out there. I always get a kick out of it when it's like, cry more, liberals, and all that stuff. And then you get a nice tall glass of conservative tears. You kind of cherish it. So we did that yesterday. But skipped over this piece, and I want to get back to it, is Clarence Thomas and the Billionaire. And it feels like, and in 2002, apparently there was reporting on this, and as well as 2011. And I was not afloat with current events in either of those years, Todd. So to me,
I got you covered. I was there.
This was more of a revelation for me than. But I saw a lot of social media clamoring around it, talking about, oh, this is old news. We knew this about Clarence Thomas already. We knew that his relationship with the Crow family was like this. This isn't that big of news. And to me, it feels like. That just makes it even more egregious, I guess. I don't know. It's very frustrating. And for those that did not see the piece, it is an excellent long-form journalism done by ProPublica. And I highly recommend you go check it out. It's written up by Joshua Kaplan, Justin Elliott, and Alex Mirjeski. And they outline the relationship that Clarence Thomas has with a billionaire here in Wisconsin, Harlan Crow, that they identify as a real estate magnate and Republican mega donor. And apparently, over the years, Todd, they've had a lot of trips together. They're friends. They classify themselves as good friends, and Harlan would never bring any work or anything like that before Clarence. If it were to be before the court, he would never talk to him about any of those things. They've done things like take $500,000 super yacht trips to Indonesia. Clarence Thomas has flown on this gentleman's private jet that the reporting from ProPublica estimates to be about $70,000 a pop. And he's done that dozens of times. Once a week, every single year, he goes up to the private resort that the Crow family owns in the Adirondacks in New York. And none of this has been reported. And it looks like a glowing, huge conflict of interest. And Clarence Thomas is kind of saying, well, what is hospitality among friends? Is his response, Todd. And I want to hear your thoughts on this reporting by ProPublica of Clarence Thomas not disclosing the amount of gifts that he's gotten and really the judicial ethics surrounding this case.
I mean, come on, Luke. I think you're overreacting. I mean, what's a $500,000 between friends?
To me, a $500,000. That's a lot.
I'm joking, of course, tongue in cheek there. No, you're absolutely right. It's deplorable. It's despicable. And to think that this has no bearing on how Clarence Thomas may or may not rule. And let's for a moment, even though I don't think it's true, let's for a moment just give him the benefit of the doubt. It's the perception of it. And also, we can have arguments. We have not arguments. We have discussions about now Democrats in Congress are saying we should have more oversight over Supreme Court justices, which I think is probably a good thing. But that's not in place. Let's just look at what is in place right now. Yeah. And that's the disclosure of some of these plane trips and things that he should have done that he didn't do. That's number one. So clearly he's in violation of things that are already on the books as far as disclosure. But number two is just, to me, it's just unseemly, right? It's just unseemly that you take these $500,000 trips with a large Republican donor.
Yeah. If it came out that, say, while she was alive, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was taking an annual trip to a private resort owned by Jeff Bezos or some unknown or to the common individual, but known in politics as a mega donor to the Democratic Party. A name like that doesn't jump. Soros, I guess, would be the first one that they would say.
I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a little old for him, but that's fine.
but say, if the circumstances were on the other foot, and this was something that got reported, and everybody was like, oh, well, everybody knows that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was taking those trips to the Adirondacks, and what's the big deal that she took a $500,000 chartered mega yacht cruise through Indonesia with the Bezos family? They're old family friends. What's the... No... Conservatives would literally be pulling out their hair and going and protesting in the streets. And it is the double standard here just feels so on the nose. And I don't understand, I guess, how this didn't make bigger ripples in the news cycles in 2002 and 2011 when these stories were surfaced then. And it's just... Reading from the piece of the ProPublica, these trips appeared nowhere on Thomas's financial disclosures. His failure to report the flights appears to violate a law passed after Watergate. So a book that's been on the law on a law that's been on the books since the 70s that requires justices, judges, members of Congress, and federal officials to disclose most gifts. Two ethics law experts say he also should have disclosed his trips on the yacht, these experts said. So it's like, it's completely insane to believe that there's two systems. Mm-hmm. The rich and wealthy, they go off on one system and everybody else is held accountable to the other.
It's a sad day for the Supreme Court, for sure. And I think that people just got used to it and thinking, well, quote, the old line, everybody does it. This happens all the time.
It's essentially what his defense is.
But the sad thing is, it doesn't. That stuff doesn't happen all the time.
Unless you're taking a mega yacht cruise that totals into about $500,000, you want to share that story with us? We'd love to hear it here on Dueling Tangents.
I'd love to really be invited to go along.
We got to get better friends, Todd, I guess. That's my takeaway, too. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We got one more segment left in the week. Share your tangent, 844-967-2789. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. That song can mean one thing and one thing only. It is Friday afternoon. We got one final segment left in the day, and we are joined by Todd Alba, host of the Todd Alba Show here on Dueling Tangents, which you can stay up to date with online after the show at Dueling Tangents on Twitter. You can share your tangents there, or you can give us a call, send us a text, 844-967-2789, talking about a piece written up terrifically at ProPublica.org about Clarence Thomas and the billionaire. And Todd, as we were getting ready to go on the show, I think we were talking about how, and you alluded to as well, it's just the illusion that there could be a conflict of interest there. There doesn't actually have to be a conflict of interest. That's why ethics laws are there, to try to prevent conflicts or even the appearance of a conflict of interest.
I talk about this sometimes, Luke, as someone who spent several years working for United States Congressman and Wisconsin State Senator, particularly in the state Senate. For many years, some of your listeners might know this name of the Senate Chief Clerk, who was there for years and years. And what he did was impart on each, not just the state senator, but also the staff and the employee, that what you did reflected on the institution. We used to use that word all the time, the institution. And it came down to, are you reflecting well the institution? And the example that I used before we went on the air was, a lot of people didn't realize that Sandra Day O'Connor, a conservative kind of a swing justice, used to vacation a lot with Antonin Scalia. Ruth Bader Ginsburg used to hang out with Antonin Scalia.
Yeah, they used to have, I believe, monthly opera dinner dates.
Yeah.
Like they spent time together, and even though very different views on the state, on the U.S.'s highest court.
And one of the things when Sandra Day O'Connor was asked, you know, she said, well, when you're a Supreme Court justice, the amount of people you can actually let down your hair with a little bit and talk freely and be yourself with is a fellow Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
And there ain't many of them.
Yeah, there's only nine. So, it could be 13. We could expand the court.
So the point is that it's not necessarily unusual for Supreme Court justices to hang out with one another, but for a Supreme Court justice to hang out with a large contributor and go on exotic trips around the world, to go to this gentleman's club out in California, which has quite a history in and of itself, that's what's unusual about it, and accepting this money.
Well, and I think it's unusual as well that if they were childhood friends and they grew up together, I think that there would be a little bit more understanding. But that's not the case. These two did not become friends, as they say, lifelong friends. Okay, well, when did the friendship start? Oh, conveniently, the friendship started after Clarence Thomas was put on the Supreme Court.
Imagine that.
1991. So yes, a very long time, but they were not childhood or even college friends. They only got to know each other after Clarence Thomas became a member of the highest court. And I think perception is a lot of things here in the United States. It is how narratives are crafted, and perception is a lot. And Thomas likes to create a different public perception for himself.
Yeah.
Reading from the ProPublica piece, in Thomas's public appearances over the years, he has presented himself as an everyman with modest taste. Quote, I don't have any problem with going to Europe, but I prefer the United States, and I prefer seeing the regular parts of the United States. Thomas said in a recent interview for a documentary about his life, which Harlan Crowe helped finance. Excellent reporting by ProPublica. Quote, I prefer the RV parks. I prefer the Walmart parking lots to the beaches and things like that. There's something normal to me about it, Thomas said. I come from regular stock, and I prefer that. I prefer being around that. And it's very telling that in a documentary that is being financed by the same guy that is financing these million-dollar lavish trips around the world to super yacht through the Indonesian islands or going to the Adirondacks at this highly exclusive resort once a week every year for decades, that he has somebody finance a documentary that says completely the opposite.
I don't know that Clarence Thomas even bought his cans of Coke at Walmart. I'm not sure about that, but maybe that's where he bought those beverages. I'm not exactly sure. But to me, you're never going to see Clarence Thomas at a Walmart. Look at one of the great parts.
I'm curious to know if they like picked. They bought a Walmart parking lot from somewhere, right, and they purchased it. If Harlan Crowe purchased this parking lot and then had it airlifted to the Adirondacks, and there's just a Walmart parking lot that Clarence Thomas can point to and say, yeah, I come from regular stock. What? Now fetch me another martini around the lake house or something.
Like, here, yeah.
I don't understand how this isn't a bigger deal, I guess, and how, again, what? If the shoe were on the other foot, conservatives would be losing their mind if there was a billionaire courting a liberal member of the U.S. Supreme Court.
What if Sonia Sotomayor was having luxury trips with George Soros? That'd be nothing, right?
Fox News would probably melt down because they wouldn't actually know how to process that information.
Right. And you're right. It's the hypocrisy of Republicans, hypocrisy of conservatives. But no, I mean, one of the great points or parts about this ProPublica piece, and people really should look it up, are the photographs that have been uncovered. And you look at this photograph turned into a painting of Clarence Thomas, the only black dude, sitting around with five or six white rich dudes from all over the world.
Leonard Leo smoking
high-end cigars, having high-end brandy. I mean, this is not a guy who shops at Walmart. No. This is not a guy who goes to Target, who goes to TJ Maxx.
No, they're not shopping for discounts or anything like that.
And to think that people are going to believe that is simply ridiculous.
Well, they put it out there, and then it gets reported on, and it gets viewed, and it gets watched by regular people, and they're like, oh, yeah, he is just like me. He likes Walmart parking lots. Because that's my favorite part about Walmart as well, is the parking lot. Right. It's just a very strange thing. The other aspect of... And sorry, we're not going to be able to get to the phone lines. We're just covering this piece, so I apologize to those waiting on hold. We only got a few minutes left here, and I want to share this point as well. But in the vision of impropriety, Harlan Crowe acts like he's never done anything to be able to sway Clarence Thomas or the Thomases.
Mm-hmm.
But he's donated hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to these conservative organizations, and he... ProPublica notes in the piece, I've only disclosed what I've legally had to disclose, which is very telling. But Ginny Thomas was a six-figure salary from one of the organizations that is through reporting, Harlan Crowe had to disclose the amount of money that he's donated. So it's very convenient that, Clarence Thomas's wife is on the payroll of the organization that gets funded through Harlan Crowe. And I don't know how this isn't a bigger story, folks.
And there, you nailed it. The Thomases.
Yes.
I mean, it's Ginny Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, who was part of the J6 committee, bipartisan committee investigation into January 6th, Trump, and 2020. This goes far deeper than Clarence Thomas.
Yeah. And we're going to continue talking about that because another one of those mega donors, Dick and Liz Uline, who are very active here in Wisconsin politics, donated to a lot of those January 6th organizations as well. Folks, have an excellent weekend. Enjoy the Easter weekend. It is a tremendous weather for the holiday weekends, and we're looking forward to it. We'll be back. Dueling Tangents will be back on Monday at 2 p.m. Thank you so much, Todd Alba.
Happy Easter. Have a peep.
There you go. I don't like peeps.
Oh.
I'll do something else.